Gene Cerulongo, and you're watching TheFightNerd.com.
This is Kenny Sugarfree Couture, and you're watching TheFightNerd.com.
This is the Fight Professor, Stephen Quadros, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
John Wertheim, author of Blood and Key. Got
schooled
by
TheFightNerd.com. This is Martin Kennan. You're watching TheFightNerd.com. This is Nathan Africa Tour, and you just got schooled by the Fight Nerd.
See it? What is it? We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Not quite live from New York. You're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
Hey, this is the Fight Nerd, and welcome to another edition of Fight Nerd Radio. Today is June 20th, 2009, and we are less than 24 hours past the Dream 10 Welterweight Grand Prix Tournament, which saw Marius Zaremskis take the title back to Lithuania after beating Jason High and Hayato Sakurai, both by a head kick knockout. We're going to talk about that coming up, and we also have two big guests joining us in the studio today. We're having an Affliction doubleheader. First up, we're going to talk with Big Ben Rothwell, who's fighting Chase Gormley. And after that, we have another Affliction fighter, Jay the Thoroughbred Haran, who is going to take on Paul Semtex Daly in a welterweight bout. We also have some listener emails to go through, so stick around for that. Before we go any further, just want to shout out to my sponsors, CagesideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, BostonBrawler.com, and one of our newest sponsors, FindMMAGym.com. So check out those guys for whatever MMA gear and apparel you might need, and head over to FindMMAGym.com to help locate the best place for you to train in all 50 states. So before we jump into Dream 10, I want to talk a little bit about the Strikeforce press conference I went to this Tuesday at Madison Square Garden to hype the Gina Carano versus Chris Cyborg fight. If you haven't been to TheFightNerd.com lately, then you haven't seen the exclusive footage I shot at the presser that breaks down the 40-minute ramblings into a coherent 11-minute video. I was really looking forward to going to this press conference, mainly because I was looking forward to getting some one-on-one time with Gina Carano, if you know what I mean, and who would want that. But as you'll find out, things don't always work out the way they should. At about midnight, the night before the presser, I got a Facebook message from Mike Efremowitz from Strikeforce, since he's in charge of the Strikeforce Facebook group, and he pretty much announced that this was going to be a public press conference then, and that there would be an autograph signing after, basically transforming this from a legit press conference to a meet-and-greet with the fans. They were also set to do a public demo outside of Madison Square Garden in a full-size cage. So it seemed to me at that point like they were turning this into a spectacle more than treating it as a serious event for the press. It seems like Strikeforce is treating this women's fight more as a spectacle than it is a legit match to begin with. But we'll see in the coming weeks how that's going to shape up. Anyway, luckily this was held on a Tuesday afternoon, and I guess most people have jobs to do, unlike myself. So there were maybe only about 100 or so people from the public who showed up to check this out. There was a pretty good amount of press there, but it was a bit unorganized. I have a feeling there were a lot of non-press guys there who also just kind of snuck in and faked it. I mean, I got crap from a guy from Showtime who thought I was a fan that snuck in. Luckily, the Fight Nerd has many friends who set the guy straight. But as far as getting stuff together, it was very, very, very crazy. Like, no one really knew where to go. There was no official sign-in the week before to get in, so, you know, a lot of press guys showed up a little confused until they actually got into the show. As for me, I got there super early by a lucky accident, so I set up right next to the Showtime live feed camera and had prime real estate for this press conference, unlike at the Affliction Trilogy press conference, where I was balancing my tripod on a flower pot, basically. Sadly, the presser didn't start till about 40 minutes after it was supposed to, and once it did, Scott Coker still hadn't even arrived yet, so they just kind of started without him. For me, of course, I'd been there, like I said, an hour before it was supposed to start, so I had basically sat through close to 2 hours of the same 5-minute hype videos for Gina and Cyborg. Needless to say, I was a little stir-crazy by then. There were no real big revelations at this presser, but Gina did have a few good stories that you can hear in the video that I put up on the site, including her origins in MMA that involve boozing, and a few moments that stand out include a female reporter popping up from her chair, not asking a question, but first to say that she was a female fighter too, and she didn't like it when boys ask her about if she's worried about not being pretty when she gets hit or some garbage like that. Which she followed up then with an equally stupid question that I can't remember pertaining to her self-started feminine rights movement in women's MMA. Another key moment was when one of those people who I mentioned snuck in and decided to take the mic and ask a question. He actually set up his own little camera on a tripod so he could videotape himself recording the question that he announced. So, dude gets up on the microphone, grabs it, and he announces himself being from Team Whoopass. The entire audience just explodes with laughter. No one knew what this guy was doing, where he was in from. I don't even remember the question he asked. For the most part, I was just laughing too hard to even remember that. Don't get me wrong, there were some good questions, but a lot of them were just about the differences between male and female MMA, as if those weren't obvious enough. And a lot of them were just more about the spectacle itself and not the real fight. And more or less, a lot of them were just oriented right to Gina the entire time. And I felt pretty bad for Cyborg by the end of this presser. I think only one or two questions were actually directed specifically for her during the entire press conference. Just about everybody else wanted to hear from Gina, and I think some reporters felt bad and started to say that this question was for both fighters, even though it really wasn't. The best part was how, after Gina would answer questions that were directed towards both of them, a lot of time they would actually ignore Cyborg's response and just move on, which I think left her a bit puzzled. Eventually they started to remember that she was there, but for me it was a little too late, and I think it was a little disrespectful of Strikeforce to ignore her like that. It's one thing if the press doesn't want to ask her questions, but, you know, for them to just kind of ignore her when the question was meant for both people, and that didn't happen once, that happened at least three or four times during the entire press conference. So because this press conference started so late, we were told one-on-one interviews weren't going to happen, since Cyborg and Gina had to do their public workout, but we could try to grab Gina if we wanted to, since Cyborg was, of course, being rushed out first to do her public workout, since not many people would want to talk to her to begin with. So once the press conference was done, Cyborg snuck away quietly while Gina got bum-rushed by the press. It wasn't a pretty sight. Basically, 30 reporters or so shoved onto a tiny stage to ask Gina the same questions she just answered at the press conference. And I was not one of those guys who rushed the stage. I just couldn't even do that. It was just too crazy for me. I didn't want to waste my time because I knew I wasn't going to get anything I needed to get out of that. But lucky for me, and a shout-out to Louis T. from the New York City MMA group, he pointed out Scott Coker just standing around doing nothing, so I grabbed him for a quick interview. That will be on the site very soon. So once again, thanks to Lewis for scouting that, and stay tuned to see that interview on the site coming up soon. It's got some interesting stuff in it. Now, I didn't actually stick around for the public workout, but to me it really didn't matter. It was New York City, and it didn't seem to even attract the huge crowd Strikeforce was hoping for. In theory, it's a smart spot since it's high traffic, but on the same note, Madison Square Garden is located right by a major subway stop, and this was going on right before rush hour, so not many passerbys were going to stick around to see it. It was basically, at best, the journalists and a few hobos with nothing else to do. So all in all, the presser was pretty fun. Nothing special, but it was just nice to see all the MMA press guys walking around. Melvina Lathan was there also. She got a nice Strikeforce poster signed by the female fighters and Scott Coker. Really, these press conferences are just fun to be at. You know, it's kind of like they're little parties for the news guys in this industry. I ran into two of my previous co-hosts there, Warren Peace from NewYorkFightScene.com and Eddie Goldman of His No Holds Barred Radio. I also ran into Ariel Helwani of MMA Rated, Hector Castro of MMA Madness, Andrew Walker of Extreme Fighter Magazine, Jim Genia, a Full Contact Fighter. I could just go on and on. There was pretty much everybody who was in the New York MMA scene, they were there. It's just nice kind of being there. It kind of reminds you that something special is going on and you're a part of that. So that's my little fight nerd nostalgia for the moment. Strikeforce Fight, of course, is coming up August 15th, and you'll hear my prediction for that show in the coming weeks. And stay tuned to that video interview with Scott Coker coming up probably next week. Anyway, enough talk about Strikeforce. Let's get down to some fights. So Dream 10 just happened not too long ago, in fact, and they crowned their welterweight Grand Prix champ, and that would be Marius Zarmiskis, steamrolling through Jason High and tournament favorite Hayato Maha Sakurai. We should have known something was wrong with Sakurai when it took him 7.5 hours to make weight, which added up to 3 different attempts. Japan needs to get their act together with a real commission, but that's a topic we're going to have to tackle on another day, because there were all sorts of little mess-ups throughout the event, and we've seen them in the past, too, with the refereeing and some of the calls being a little awkward, and sometimes more towards the Japanese fighters. Zarmiskis came into this as a dark horse and ended up winning in a total time of roughly 6.5 minutes, and he won both of his tournament fights by head kick. I wasn't too sure about Zarmiskis at first, too, since I hadn't really seen too much of him. And when I did see his first match in the tournament, I wasn't really too fond of those leaping knees he kept trying on Sakurai. But the Lithuanian proved himself more against Jason High. High had a tough fight against the always-game Andre Galvao and won a full 15 minutes in a very, very close fight. Jason High was actually my pick for the tournament, and at least he made it into the finals. I think he's got a good future ahead of him despite this loss at Dream 10. But didn't really make a difference tonight because Zarmiskis was the winner. And what's next for him, we're going to see. If you had a chance to watch this, you might remember a pretty funny quote from commentator Michael Schiavello, which I made note of. At the end of the final match, he was basically screaming his head off that this was the greatest knockout we've ever seen. For some reason, I do like Schiavello, mainly because of his enthusiasm and his kind of funny accent. It sounds like he's half Australian, half British. But this was just a bit much. I don't know. Compared to the bitter whinings of the unenthusiastic and often boisterous Sky Mesger throughout the night. It's a good counterpoint to have Schiavello, but he may have jumped the gun calling this the best knockout we've ever seen. I'm pretty sure I've seen a lot better ones, and I'm pretty sure you have too. Despite that, Zaramiskus did look good, and I'm interested to see what's going to happen next to him and Jason High and Dream, as well as Hayato Sakurai, since his momentum may have just stopped big time after this fight. He was just on his way to a nice little comeback, and then missing weight for 7.5 hours, and then being the tournament favorite and losing by a head kick, and just being beaten on the entire time. It wasn't like it was, domination. It was pretty back and forth, but for the most part, Zaramiskus was pushing the pace and really pushing Sakurai the more the match went on. The more the short time that match itself went on, so it wasn't even that long of a fight to begin with. Some non-good tournament fights also went down at Dream 10, including the comeback of Paulo Filho in an exciting match against Melvin Manouf. Manouf has been on fire as of late, and he is just plain and simple a scary freak of nature. And somehow, Filho survived the storm and caught the Dutchman in a sweet armbar. The last time we saw Filho was in WEC back in November, where he was just totally out of it, if you might remember, and he lost a lackluster decision to Chael Sonnen. But now it looks like he's back on top, and he looked pretty good, despite eating those strikes from Melvin. But really, how can he not get hit by Melvin Manouf in a fight? He's still not much on the ground, Manouf, of course, and even actually got up on top when he was on Filho at one point. He was grounding and pounding Filho at one point in the match, and actually just decided to get up. Didn't want to risk being on the ground with Paulo at all. But nonetheless, Paulo Filho is back, and now we're going to see what Dream's going to do with him. And maybe we'll see if he's headed back to WEC at some point also. And we might get the end to the Chael Sonnen trilogy and see who comes out on top of those fights. So it's good to see Filho back in action and looking good and actually paying attention to the fight this time and not looking to some sort of ghost in the back section of the arena. A few other notes. I was really looking forward to watching Shaolin versus Aoki, Vitor Shaolin Ribeiro against Shinya Aoki, and that turned out to be a huge snore fest. Here we had two world-class grapplers trading kicks in a not very exciting match. When you have a fight with Shinya Aoki and he's leading the successful strike count with 2 out of 2 connected punches, you're in for a dull match. Yeah, I was expecting this to be a crazy submission grapple match, just going all over the ring, switching positions, transitioning, submission attempts all over the place. No, we didn't get any of that. In fact, the two fighters didn't even hit the floor until the last 2.5 minutes of round two, and by then, it was just Aoki switching from rubber guard to close guard, and Shaolin really not doing anything except just kind of moving his hips around because he didn't want to get caught in a submission. It was just more of nothing. I mean, for the most part, Aoki did push the pace, if you want to call it that, but what kind of pace was it? It was just very, very slow. Shinya Aoki throwing some hard kicks, at least for him, and throwing some good punches, at least for him. But it left me a little unhappy with their performances. And I know a lot of people are also looking forward to that fight, so you know, next time if they want to do that kind of grappling match, they should just head to Abu Dhabi and not waste our time fighting in the Dream Ring. Jesse Taylor also fought in this card. He came in with about a week's notice. He looked pretty great in his match against Dong Sik Yoon. Unfortunately, Yoon had to quit due to a leg injury. Taylor was all over Yoon. I'm confident he would have taken this match anyway, even if Yoon wasn't hurt. So it really didn't make a difference. Jesse Taylor looked great. I'm sure we're going to see him back in Dream. This was a big chance for him, big opportunity, and he took it by the reins and kicked some ass. Katsunori Kikuno's technical knockout was also very nice, but the rest of that match was piss-poor pathetic. In fact, to sum it up best, Michael Schiavello said, "The grandparents of Willy Wonka moved more than these guys." That's how bad it was. And for making a Willy Wonka reference, Schiavello might very well be my favorite commentator of all time. Alright, so on some listener email, I got a few nice letters this week, aside from the usual death threats I often get. And one of them I'm going to respond to on air right now. This email came from Andromania, and he asked me what my thoughts were on UFC 100 and what I thought of Brock Lesnar retaining his title. Maybe I wasn't too clear last week, but I actually really liked UFC 100. Any of those fights on the main card could have been main events on any other show, even Akiyama vs. Belcher. I could have seen that being a Fight Night main event. There was lots of good matchmaking, lots of good fights. Yeah, it was a good card. I think, you know, people don't remember from the UFC 99. I wasn't too happy with UFC 99. But UFC 100 was a really good show. I wish I was there to see it live, because it sounded like it was just a great place to be that weekend. Sometimes a lot of fans get wrapped up in the Dana White hate, I think. But we have to remember that despite the business end of it that we sometimes don't always agree with, this is still about the fighters, and none of those fights disappointed me. I was happy with the unexpected win from Coleman, the great knockout that came from Dan Henderson on Michael Bisping, and I even kind of sort of enjoyed Lesnar's win over Mir despite his post-fight antics. What do I think of Lesnar retaining his title? I think he's not going to be letting go of that gold anytime soon. We can hate on Lesnar's post-fight antics all we want and his attitude for as many days so we can go on talking about it, but the man does have legit skills and he's going to go a long way in the UFC, part of which might be due to that bad boy persona. He's still pretty young and has remained generally injury-free throughout his athletic career, even in pro wrestling, aside from one lovely little concussion that he had back at WrestleMania. But I think we're going to have a lot more of Lesnar in the next few years. I mean, there's no denying he's going to be the star. He's going to be pushed pretty hard. And how could he not get pushed hard? He has the personality, despite it being kind of a jackass personality. It's at least something, and it's marketable. He still has a lot to prove, and I think his next opponent is going to be his best test. We're going to probably see the best Lesnar come in, because it's going to be someone really, really good. It's going to be probably either Shane Carwin, it could be Cain Velasquez, it could even be Krokop, who could shock us all and head kick Lesnar into oblivion to take the UFC strap away from him. It could even be Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira. There's still a lot of variables that we talked about last week. But either way, Lesnar is here to stay, and we're going to have to deal with that until someone can get that belt off his waist. And at this point, he still really hasn't been tested that hard, if you think about it. I mean, he's fought an aging Randy Couture. He took on Frank Mir twice. Heath Herring was really his best test at this point, and Herring couldn't really offer much either, since he's really just a journeyman of the sport. But nonetheless, we will see what happens with Lesnar in the future, but I think he's going to be sticking around for quite some time. We're going to have to get used to that fact. All right, so after the break, we're going to talk with Big Ben Rothwell, and then after that, we're going to go hear from Jay Haran as we go into this Affliction interview doubleheader today. But first, we've got a few words from our sponsors. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Cageside MMA, carrying brands from around the world such as Triumph United, Clinch Gear, Twins, Windy, and Bad Boy, as well as their own well-crafted brand of Cageside MMA products. CagesideMMA.com is your internet superstore for all MMA gear and apparel. Battle-tested and fighter-approved, you won't find better quality or better service from any other site carrying their variety of gear, apparel, and workout equipment. Head over to CagesideMMA.com where you can shop 24/7. Or call 919-477-1999 Monday through Friday. If you don't, you'll regret it. CagesideMMA.com. And we're back on Fight Nerd Radio, coming up on August 1st. This man we have with us in the studio today is going to be taking on Chase Gormley at Affliction Trilogy. That man will be Big Ben Rothwell, the North Star. Ben, thanks for being here. Did I get the nickname right? Is it Big Ben officially? Is it the North Star? Which one is it right now? That's a fitting nickname. So how's training going for this fight against Chase Gormley?
Great, man. I'm excited. I'm 2 weeks out and ready to fight now. So,
are you doing anything different for this fight, or just kind of the same training you typically do? Do you have any weaknesses scouted for this fight?
Weaknesses?
Yeah, anything you might want to take advantage in this fight of going again against Gormley?
You know, him and I are probably looking at each other both as being well-rounded. You know, obviously people would break it down that I had the advantage on the feet and he'd have the advantage wrestling, and on the ground it's kind of a toss-up. But I don't see it that way. I see it just like, you know, he throws punches and kicks, and, you know, I train with nothing but wrestlers, so it's going to be really who's going to, you know, push their, you know, make their will happen in a fight, and, you know, I don't care how many fights he has, I know that he's going to be tough, he's coming, you know, probably what happened to Andre Orlovsky was probably the worst thing that could have happened to my opponent. Seemed like a guy that's kind of like, nobody knows, trying to make it come up, and that really, it really pissed me off, actually. It actually really pushed me in my training, so basically it's going to want more, and train, and I want to take that, so...
So I remember reading another interview. You talked about an old running joke in the IFL. It was this guy who was a 0-7 fighter, and it was always a joke. You know, whoever lost to him would be not a very popular kind of guy, I'm sure.
What's that? Losing to him? No, everybody said like it was. Nobody wanted to fight him because they lost, they killed themselves.
What was that guy's name? Was that Walter Koljak? Okay, yeah. So that's a hard last name to say.
Literally,
I don't know.
The toughest 0-7 guy that probably is out there in the MMA world.
Those are the guys you gotta watch out for. They're hungry. So how's the other guys going at the... So how are the other fighters at Miletich Fighting System going right now? I know there's a lot of guys who are getting ready for fights coming up soon also, besides yourself.
Yeah, LTD is going to be on the card with me, and Jesse Lennox is fighting the week after. I think they both have really tough fights, too. But they both work real hard, you know, and they're training to win.
All right, well, good luck to everybody at Miletich, of course. Now, last time we saw you fight was at Adrenaline 2, fighting against Chris Glenn, and you got a TKO in that fight. That was back in December, and now here we are, and we're going to be fighting in August. Is there going to be any ring rust in this match?
Not so much. I mean, luckily for me, I've been fighting since 1999, and, you know, I've had year-off layoffs before, and I fought 8 times in 1 year. In fact, in 2002, I fought 11 times in 1 year. So I fought in a whole bunch in a year, and I've never fought at all in a year. So it's always up and down for me, and I'm just kind of used to it after all these years. You know, 10 years of experience. You just deal with it. You know, competition is pretty difficult to me.
Well,
that is what you make of it, too.
Alex, we've seen in your past, even in the IFL days, you were fighting on a very, very consistent basis sometimes, you know, almost every month or every other month at least. Do you prefer to have that kind of time, that short time in between fights, or do you like to have more of a downtime in between?
If it was up to me, it would be like 3 or 4 fights a year. I don't think I've ever only had 3 or 4 fights a year. It's either I have a whole bunch or I don't have any.
Yeah.
So it's like, ideally it'd be cool to have a fight like every 4 months. I think that'd be great. Because then you get a month or two to work on your skills and just work on strength training and work on things, and then you get 2 months just to work on getting ready for the fight. And that would be good, but it don't ever work out that way.
Yeah,
a lot of fights are either short bonus or 8 weeks, you know?
Yep. Now, I wanted to ask about the Affliction contracts guys have, because I know it's a non-exclusive contract. Have you had any other offers to fight elsewhere at this time?
I'm not really obliged to say. I mean, hope you understand. I mean, I'm just trying to do what I can for Affliction right now and, you know, fight for these guys. And as far as fighting anywhere else, you know, I'm sure it's possible. And yeah, I get all the offers from just about everybody. But right now, I'm just trying to focus on these guys and see what's going to happen with them and see what happens after this show.
All right, now, the last time we saw you in the Affliction ring, that was against Andre Arlovsky, which was a great fight. And Arlovsky has actually been cut recently from his contract with Affliction since he hasn't been doing too well. Are you worried that you might be in the same position right now?
People always are. If you went out and got knocked out in 30 seconds by Andre, that'd have been it for me right then and there. Luckily, without even fighting very well, still took him into the third round and got to at least have a good enough dough that, you know, they invited me back. But you go out and, you know, have a bad performance with one fight, you know, that could be it. Don't matter where you're at, you know. But you know, Andre went on a huge winning streak. He loses one fight to the number one heavyweight. It's like, okay, whatever. And then he gets cut off by the guy that he was supposed to win, and that was it, you know. So I bet he wasn't expecting that.
You're fighting a guy who's whose record isn't quite as big as yours. Are you worried that a loss here would be, you know, very bad for you? Like, this could be a do-or-die kind of fight for your career with Affliction?
Oh, this guy's got way more to gain from this fight than I do, for sure. I mean, yeah, when you're fighting a guy that has only so many fights, it's not a good thing for me. Because they'll put on paper, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to win. So that if I don't, you know, yeah, then I'm, you know, it is bad. But
So every fight, too, is basically a new fight.
Yeah, every time. I mean, I don't care what the guy's record is. And Andrzejewski's last fight was just... should have been a slap back in the face to everybody that forgets that.
All right, now, do you think Affliction is going to continue after this event?
See, that's what I don't know. That's why I'm just holding on. I'm going to go out and put on a great performance and do the best I can for them. And, you know, I hope they do. You know, that's all I know. I can just hope that they can hang in there.
Well, if worse comes to worse, if Affliction does go away, I mean, are you looking ahead to the UFC maybe, or Strikeforce, or even go on the Ultimate Fighter show?
I don't know about the Ultimate Fighter show business. I mean, you know, I think that I'm one of the guys that get directly put into the UFC if I was to go that route. I had a pretty good relationship with the people I know there too, so you know, they kind of let me know where I'm at, and you know, I feel like I paid my dues. I feel like a lot of the Ultimate Fighter guys are like, got four fights and things like that. And, you know, I've been, like I said, I've been doing this for a while, so.
Yep.
But, you know, Strikeforce, too, that's another good, you know, good up-and-coming organization. And, you know, there's definitely some matchups there. There's definitely some guys I'd like to fight there, too. You know?
Well, the reason I ask about Tough is because one of your former rivals in the IFL, Roy Nelson, he's going to be on Season 10 of The Ultimate Fighter, and there's a guy who's definitely paid his dues. Both you guys are former headliners in the IFL, but now here he is.
Yeah, no, he's in a position. He's got to do more than just win one fight. He's got to win the whole show.
Yeah.
He has to, because if he doesn't, you know, he's in there. He's supposed to win it. He's the ringer. He's the ringer of the show. He's supposed to win it. I mean, that's got to be a lot of pressure on him.
And
he's got to win four fights. You know.
I mean, coming from your kind of record, I mean, would you be offended if you were basically that? With a record like that, and then put on the Tough show?
Well, I don't think he... You know, first of all, he's got half the amount of fights I got. And two, he is tough, and he's fought really tough dudes, no doubt about it. But some of his management, I guess they seen it as an opportunity for him to get in. Because the bottom line is, if he does win it, he's in a good position. Because it seems like all the guys that are on the TV show, they get taken care of. You know, so... You know, he's rolling the dice, and he should win it. And if he does, he's going to be in a really good position. If he does. I don't know where they were going to go with him, so they just felt like maybe that was the only choice. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a hard place to be sometimes. Now, looking ahead, looking ahead for fights, who would you like after this match you have?
Well, it's this matchup side. Like, I'd like to fight all sorts. I mean, I'm willing to fight anybody. I mean, I'd be honored to fight the top five guys for sure, just because I'll fight them. But then guys that aren't that level yet, DK, Brett Rogers, I'd really like to fight right now.
Are you officially calling out Brett?
I want to fight Brett Rogers for sure.
Is this the official call out right now on Fight Nerd Radio for Brett Rogers?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, I don't care. I mean, I'd love to fight him.
That'd be a pretty good bang. How would you see that fight going?
I don't know which round or how, just somehow me winning. Because it'd be a scrap on the feet, so I won't just say a knockout because that's what he likes to do. I like to say that, you know, I'm going to win by a submission, a TKO, knockout, I mean, whatever, it doesn't matter. I've got lots of ways to win that fight.
So how come you have this interest in Brett Rogers so much?
It's just his last fight. He got my attention.
And that last fight was against Arlovski, of course, where he knocked him out in 20 seconds, I believe.
I think it was quicker than that.
Yeah,
something like that.
Something fast.
Yeah.
All right, so coming up in the main event at Affliction Trilogy is going to be Josh Barnett versus Fedor Emelianenko, and I'm asking all the fighters who I talked to, who is your pick to win that fight?
Well, let's put it this way. I've been training for this fight, and I was fighting Josh Barnett. The reason being is... fighting, that means I'm training for a guy that has knockout ability on the feet, really good wrestling, and a full submission game. And not only all those three things, the difference between him and Fedor is he's also a big heavyweight. He's a real heavyweight. So that's what I train again. That's what I train for. You know what I mean? So obviously, I have a lot of respect for Josh Barnett, and that's who I feel is a strong guy. And I feel if anybody's going to give Fedor his best fight, it's going to be Josh Barnett right now. Fedor is Fedor. I mean, he's number one. I ain't gonna bet against the guy, but I think if someone's gonna carry Fedor into somewhere he's never been before, and it's past 20 minutes into feel like when he fought Krokop, he didn't fight like the best he could have. It felt like he kind of was, I don't want to hear, but I don't know what it was. He didn't seem like he was all, you know, like the best he had. But I feel like when he is very confident, he does fight like that, and he fights Fedor like that, Fedor's going to have a tough fight, because if Josh gets him down and is on top of Fedor, I think that's a place that Fedor really hasn't been before. I mean, he has against a guy like Hunt. You know, that was Mark Hunt, and you know, Mark Hunt was giving him trouble on top of him. You know, Josh Barnett could give him a lot more than Mark Hunt did. So,
do you think a lot of that is related?
Hell of a fight, man.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think a lot of that trouble against Hunt was related to just how big Hunt is?
That's what I mean. He's a big dude, you know, and so is Barnett. I mean, you get a big wrestler type guy that knows what he's doing.
So, if you were to fight Fedor, what would you... Sorry, go ahead.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to ask, if you were going to fight Fedor, what would be your strategy to take him on?
Just to mix it up and be able to improvise on the dot. That's what Fedor does, everybody. He improvises, too. And he's always thinking, he's always two steps ahead.
Yeah, seems like it's very hard to
come ahead. If you can't be that, then there's no way you're going to beat him. You think you're going to go in there and maybe just throw a punch to get lucky, but good luck.
All right, you had mentioned at the top of the show. Sorry, I keep cutting you off. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I just, you know, I also have to make sure my conditioning is just outstanding. If it's a 25-minute fight, then I have to make sure I can double balls to the wall for 30 minutes. I mean, you got to have that, too.
Now, we've seen Fedor go a long time in the past, even against Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, who most people consider the number two heavyweight. And Nog spent the whole time perched on his back just eating those blasts. I mean, it's not a good position to be in.
Right.
Now, you mentioned at the top of the show that you're a big anime and otaku fan, and you're a big fan of Fist of the North Star, right? What other animes are you into?
Ninja Scroll's my favorite. Probably always will be. I didn't really find anyone that's topped it.
Classic.
You know, I haven't gone hunting for them, but that was, like, my favorite one. It's got some of the coolest characters. Kasai was probably one of the coolest characters, I think, out there. So, Ninja Scroll's my favorite.
Are you a fan of, like, more of those kind of samurai-style ones, or more action?
Yeah, when I watch animation, I love, you know, like, Fist of the North Star and Ninja Scroll. I like the fighting. I like the cool, yeah, the sword fights and things like that. Like, that's stuff that I'm into. Because a lot of them are just a lot of talking and a lot of stuff that I don't really care too much about.
So no Ram the Half or anything like that?
No.
Are you a big comic fan also outside of anime?
Yeah, like I for a period of time during high school I collected a lot of books. Like I had, everybody liked X-Men and stuff, but I liked them before the movies came out, and some other ones that were, you know, just a real mix up. I mean, I had a lot of Spawn and some other ones. You know, I wasn't so much into the Spider-Man or Fantastic Four. Like, you know, I collected a few of them, but they actually pay attention to the stories. Doom 2099 was a series that came out, and it didn't take off, but I really liked the story. Dr. Doom was one of my favorite characters.
I remember that series. That was part of the 2099 universe they made up, I believe.
Yeah, there was like a Punisher 2099 and X-Men. There was a bunch of them, but I like the Dr. Doom's version.
Oh, I'm glad I'm not the only person that remembers that series. That's going way back.
I still got all the number ones.
Are you still collecting or reading any comics right now, or just kind of looking at your old back issues?
No, I mean, not right now, man. I mean, from time to time I might see it. I like to go see the movies that have come out of recent comic books and stuff, you know, but not really much in the hobby of that. Believe it or not, my big hobby right now is gardening.
Gardening. How's that going for you?
Pretty good. I got a beautiful garden front and back of my house.
Oh, who got you into that?
My wife and I just kind of decided that we were going to start doing it. You know, she's really helped me change my diet and got me more into organics and things like that. So, like, you know, my mom was a really big gardener, and I just remembered a lot of things from back then. So I just started doing our own thing.
So you're growing a lot of your own vegetables right now and stuff in your backyard?
Right. Yeah, I got broccoli, cauliflower, a few different beans, spinach, lettuce, tomatoes, two different types of tomatoes. potatoes, carrots, onions, two types of onions, blueberries, raspberries. Yeah, we got nuts, man.
So it sounds like this is going to be the healthiest Ben Rothwell we ever see in a fight.
I'm pretty good right now, man. Yeah, I'm pretty healthy.
All right, so we know we've heard you do a little pro wrestling promo on Brett Rogers before. I'd like to have you cut a little promo on Chase Gormley and get your last shot at talking some trash, if you'd like, right now on our show.
I'm not a trash talker, man. I don't know. I'd like to give you something, but I don't have much to say other than, you know, I'm gonna let all my talking be done in the ring.
All right.
You know, I'm gonna let him know right now. If he's worried about me taking it easy on him, I'm gonna stir him right now. There's no underestimating going on, and you better be ready for war.
All right, well, Ben Rothwell is not a man who mixes words. You can catch him fighting an Affliction Trilogy on August 1st on pay-per-view. Ben, thank you very much for being here, and good luck in your fight.
Thank you, sir.
Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Hoodlum Fight Gear. Check out their gear and apparel at hoodlumfightgear.com. Also by Boston Brawler. Whether you're a Red Sox or a Yanks fan, you can't deny good designs. Check out bostonbrawler.com. And also by findmmagym.com. Looking for an MMA gym near you? Head to the best site to find your new place to train at findmmagym.com. All right, and we're back on Fight Nerd Radio. Coming up August 1st on Affliction Trilogy, Paul Semtex Daly is going to be taking on this man, the thoroughbred Jay Haran. He's joining us in the studio today. Jay, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so how's training going now for this fight?
Training's going great. Everything's on track. I'm in the shape. About 2 weeks left to the fight, and I'm feeling real good.
Are you doing anything special at training for this fight, or just more of the same?
A lot of the same, but I brought in one of the best kickboxers in Vegas to sparring, and you know, just to get that look of a real polished kickboxer, and you know, definitely got all the same guys down there at Extreme Control. Like I said, training's been going great. I'm in tremendous shape. I'm ready to go.
Do you have anybody you like to train the most with at Extreme Couture?
I like to train with all the guys, you know, but it depends on who I'm fighting. You know, it's who I'm fighting I train with more. We have a whole stable of Southpaws. Actually, my last fight I fought a Southpaw, so most of my sparring was with lefties, you know. So, I mean, it varies every camp, but I pretty much train with everybody.
I don't know, speaking of the last event, that was Affliction 2, which was back in January, I believe, and you fought Jason High in that event, and you got a really awesome knockout that unfortunately most people didn't see because it was actually kept off the pay-per-view for some reason. It was basically, you fought right after the main event, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, you know, it's part of the game, you know, stuff happens. They ran out of time, and you know, my position on the HD Net card got bumped to the pay-per-view. You know, but at the end of the day, I still went out and handled my business, so I definitely thank God for that.
Are you worried about that happening at this show also, or is everything looking like it's going to be better run this time?
No. I'm definitely, either I'm on the pay-per-view or I'm the main event on the HD Net card.
All right, so hopefully we're going to get to see you knock out Paul Daly this time, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, knockout, submission, whatever. I take it as it comes. I get out there and let my skills flow.
Do you have any specific weaknesses scouted yet for Paul Daly? Without giving away too much of the strategy.
Yeah, he's predominantly a striker, so, you know, I haven't really seen too much of submission game or, you know, he's okay at defending takedowns, but, you know, he's not as well-rounded. So that's his weakness. And I'm going to try to go out and be, you know, that's the way I fight. I'm a well-rounded fighter. I strike, I take down, I do submission. So, you know, that's the way I'm going to fight this fight, like I fight every fight.
Have you been watching a lot of Paul's fights to get ready for this, or just, again, kind of just doing a lot of the same training and just getting ready to fight?
Yeah, I watch a little tape on guys, but not on what I've been watching, you know, hours of tape and stuff. I pretty much go out and train how I'm going to train and try to go out and fight how I'm going to fight. I'm not worried. You know, I'm trying to worry about what I'm going to do and not too much of what he's going to do. I got to go out and impose my will.
All right. Now, you've worked with a lot of different companies in the past. You're a UFC veteran, you're a former IFL champion, and now you're fighting for Affliction. How has Affliction treated you as far as in comparison to other companies you fought for?
suited me good. I mean, you know, I got the pretty much I got the contract I wanted. Miscommunication the last time I was out fighting them with the TV time and stuff, but you know, everything got handled and everything's on track for this one.
Do you have an exclusive contract or a non-exclusive contract that would let you jump around to other companies if you were offered?
Yeah, that's one of the great things that I got with Fishing that definitely you know, made a big reason why I went with them was non-exclusive deal that I had with them, so I could fight for different organizations. Obviously not UFC, because when you sign with them you're exclusive, but like an organization like Strikeforce, I had offers to fight in Dream, it just wasn't the right timing. You know, so that's pretty big for me with the non-exclusive.
Fender, the Dream Welterweight Grand Prix, of course, is this weekend, starting off with that. Were you offered to fight in that tournament?
Yeah, I was offered to fight in that, but it was just, the timing wasn't right, so I had to decline. You know, that was definitely something I would have liked to really do, but, you know, like I said, the timing wasn't right.
Well, hopefully we'll get to see you in Japan one of these days. That'd be awesome to have you over there, that's for sure. I'd look forward to seeing you knock out some of the Japanese guys. I want to ask a personal question. Now, there's a ton of IFL guys that are fighting on this Affliction card, and again, you yourself are a former IFL champion. Do you think, or why do you think, that there are so many IFL fighters right now fighting in Affliction, not really in the UFC? You know, there's a few IFL guys in the UFC, but most of them seem to be in Affliction right now.
No, I think UFC has a bunch of IFL fighters, too, and Affliction has a lot of IFL fighters. I don't think Affliction has more or less. I mean, I just think, you know, the guys got opportunities to fight for Affliction and good money, and they went that route. And guys got good opportunities to fight for UFC, and they went that route. You know, I don't know exactly what guys got paid and stuff, but, you know, they did what's best for them, and that's a great thing.
And it sounds like you're getting treated and paid a lot better by Affliction also in the UFC, and especially that contract you mentioned. That must have been a very big, important deal for you.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, also at the time when I signed with them, it made me to go in that direction, you know. But, you know, definitely one day I would like to fight for UFC again, when the time is right. And, you know, definitely we'll go sit down with them and talk to them and make that happen. But right now I'm with Affliction and negotiating with Strikeforce and, you know,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but at the end of the day too, I gotta handle my business on August 1st with Paul Daly, and you know, after that I can sit down with my team and my management and see what the next step is. But definitely I don't look past anybody, and you know, I'm getting ready to get it on with Daly on August 1st.
All right, well, I want to actually ask you a little bit about some UFC stuff now, because you had your UFC debut against Georges St-Pierre. And we just saw him at UFC 100 defending his title against Thiago Alves. Did you happen to catch UFC 100?
Yeah. A lot of great fights. I thought GSP definitely looked dominant. Henderson, that was a great knockout. You know, there was a lot of good fights.
Now, you had fought Georges St-Pierre in your very first UFC fight. Would you like to have a rematch with him one day?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, I want to avenge all my losses. That's, you know, that's being part of being a fighter. I mean, you know, that's one thing I would like to do, but again, I don't fight for UFC right now. I fight for Affliction, so, you know, and also when I do fight for UFC, I'm sure I have to definitely start on the bottom to work my way up to a title shot or whatever. So, you know, that's, I'm willing to do that. That's the way I want it, my route to go anyway. I want to prove myself and, you know, be all the contenders and then go out and, you know, the losses that I have.
And now, pending negotiations with Zufa occurred, and you were given a spot on The Ultimate Fighter, would you take a spot in The Ultimate Fighter, or do you want to go directly to the main show?
Yeah, probably directly to the main show. I mean, at this point in my career, you know, I don't really need the show. The guys that get on the show have to be, you know, they're doing to build up their name and their stuff like that. I mean, that's a great thing, you know, but also I know, I'm comfortable in my own house and no cameras around, and, you know, I don't know, you know, it's just not me. But, again, I couldn't say never if the money was right, if they were paying me and sponsors, and, you know, it was a great deal, then, hey, I would do it, you know. Yeah, I would have to see, you know. Right now, though, I would like to just go straight into the show.
All right, sounds good. I want to ask another thing on a personal level, because you've been with Affliction now for two fights, and right now it's coming up to the, this is their third event. It's called Trilogy. A lot of people are saying this might be the end of Affliction. No one's really too sure. What's your personal thoughts on if this will be the grand epitaph of Affliction?
I really don't even know. I mean, my job is to fight, man. The business side of it, I don't really know. You know, how much money they're making, if they're winning, if they're, you know, doing good, or if they're losing, if they're gonna have another show. You know, my job is to get out there and put on exciting fights and do what I do. So, but like I said again, I gotta be on the table with Strikeforce, and you know, I'm sure, you know, we could go. You know, my manager could go talk to UFC. You know, so you know, I've been down this road before when I had a title for IFL, and then all of a sudden they went bankrupt. And I had to start over with a new organization. I mean, it's nothing new to me. That's part of my career. You know, I'm sure I could bounce right back if it does happen again. But, you know, I'm on the August 1st card. I'm excited. You know, it's going to be a great show. A lot of great fights. And I'm definitely excited to be a part of it.
Well, as a fan of that Affliction show, what fight are you looking forward to the most to be able to watch after your fight?
Definitely the Fedor. On that fight, the Belfort Santiago, I mean, Mustafi, Babalu, Bordecki, Lazone, I mean, the whole card, man. We got Holmanek on there fighting. Man, it's going to be a incredible night, man. I want to see every fight. I'm a fan first, you know. I love watching fights, so.
So who's going to be
when I get done, I'm definitely going to get out there and check out some fights.
Who's going to be your pick for...
Actually, I had that plan the last show, because I was the co-main event on the HDNet, and, you know, I ended up not being able to watch any fight, because I was warming up the whole damn time, because I was winged out, and then I fought after Fedor, so the show was pretty much done, so, you know, problem got rectified this time, and, you know, it's going to be another good night.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, they have had some schedule problems in the past, even at the very first Affliction show. There was a fight that was supposed to be a dark match or, you know, curtain opener, and that didn't even happen just because, I guess, timing was so messed up for these events. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, and they were kind of saying that about this. I was going through totally, you know, crazy emotions, roller coaster ride. I was, at one point, I heard that my fight was canceled. So I was just like, you know, what the hell is going on here? So I was definitely, having to stay focused, and thank God I had good people around me, my team, my manager, and everybody keeping me, you know, relaxed and just, you know, stay focused.
If you look at some other matches in your career, you've had a lot of similar things happen. Like, you know, it's, again, your fight, a lot of people not having seen that Affliction 2, and then going way back to your UFC time where you fought Jonathan Goulet in what a lot of people consider to be one of the bloodiest matches in the UFC that no one saw. That's in fact, I've never seen the gym. In fact, they have that mat at the Extreme Couture gym full of Jonathan Goulet's blood from that event. I mean, it's kind of weird. Just so many of your fights, a lot of people haven't really gotten a chance to see, and it's unfortunate right now because you're a very, very good welterweight. But hopefully, I'm looking forward either way to seeing your match. That's coming from the fan inside me right now.
Yeah.
All right, now speaking of being a fan and me being the fight nerd, of course, I got to ask about some stuff you like to do outside of the ring. And I know that you are a big fan of cars. Is that correct?
Yeah, I love cars. I've been, you know, ever since I was a kid playing with Hot Wheels, man. I always loved cars. When I was 13 years old, I bought my car for like $200, and, you know, ever since then, I've just been into cars.
What was your first car?
A Dodge Colt, 1982 Dodge Colt. Little four-speed.
And what are you driving right now? Not the same thing, I hope.
Huh?
What are you driving right now? Hopefully not the same thing.
No, I have a 07 Dodge Charger, and then my baby is my 76 Impala. It has a two-tone. own paint job, you know, custom interior, 350 engine, have his work engine holding the whole line, man. Definitely built it up from the ground up, man. It's just, you know, that's my little hobby. When I you know, get a chance, I like to fix my car up a little bit.
So what's your ultimate fantasy car that you'd like to own one day? Favorite car in a movie? Personally, I'm a big Ghostbuster fan. I'd like to drive the Ecto-1 one of these days. How about yourself? What's a favorite car you've ever seen in a movie?
Shelby on 69. I'm gone in 60 seconds. That Shelby Eleanor.
You just want that car because Angelina Jolie might come with it? All right, nice, nice. All right, now, do you also play racing games, by the way, or just spend a lot of time fixing real cars up?
Nah, I'm not really a video game guy. I mean, everybody in my camp is a video game guy. They love playing video games, especially when they're in camp. I just never got into it, man. I mean, it's not really me. I play a little bit, but not really. I like to watch movies, man.
Have you seen any good movies lately? Anything to keep your mind off the fight upcoming?
What did I see lately? I just seen that movie. It was hilarious. Hangover.
Oh, okay, with my...
That was funny.
I haven't had a chance to see it yet. I pretty much just wanted to see it for that one clip of Mike Tyson doing that Phil Collins song. That looks pretty awesome. Now, I want to ask you something about something called green lighting. I saw an interview a little while back with Sean Tompkins, and he had mentioned something called green lighting that you guys do at the Extreme Couture Gym. Can you fill in the listeners on what green lighting is exactly?
They took that whole situation out of context. I mean, basically, it's like, you know, when a dude comes in the gym acting like, you know, he's the baddest thing on earth, disrespecting, you know, we put him in his place. That's it. If he thinks he's bad and he's going so hard on everybody, and then, you know, we'll just put him in his place. But that's it. You know, they took it out of left field, saying that anybody that comes in there, we green light them. No, hell no. You know, it's all about respect. I went to somebody's gym, you know, and I disrespected their gym. They would probably do the same to me. I go to everywhere, especially if I'm going somewhere new. Respect. You know, hey, how you doing? You know, I'm here to work, whatever. You know, but it's just the guys that come in that just have an ego and they want to go on and start beating up guys in, and then we get on them. Yeah.
So basically, just, you know, come in there, treat the guys with respect, and you'll get treated the same way, more or less, right?
Of course. Of course. Like any real gym, you go in there and you disrespect any real gym, they'll do the same thing. I think if it's a real fight gym, you know, they're not going to let somebody walk in there and act crazy and you know, trying to knock guys out or whatever, so on and so forth. You know, you gotta take care of your home. I mean, that's where you make your money at. That's your gym. That's you know, that's pretty much your church, man. That's your temple. You gotta take care of it.
That's right, and it seems like you've been the one nominated as the guy who green lights the best on some people. I mean, have you had to do that recently?
No, I mean, it's a lot of guys in there. I mean, it's not only me, but, you know, that's my other home, man. That's where I go to relieve all my stress. So, you know, you want to come in there and disrespect, then you're going to get it put on you. But bottom line, and like I said, if I went in and I disrespected, I can 100% guarantee they would put it on me. You know, I'm not like that. I respect everybody. I respect every gym.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about respect. And, you know, I for one, anybody who's wondering, you know, I would do the same thing. If I was in your shoes, someone comes into my gym, someone comes into my home and starts disrespecting me, I'd be the same way, you know, it's...
Exactly.
You know,
yeah,
so...
That's normal. I mean, you know, it's like somebody coming in your house and just disrespecting your house and, you know, knocking over stuff and not even caring about it. What are you going to do? You're going to throw them out.
Well, they'll leave my house in a body bag, that's for sure.
You know, and that's all it's about. I mean, you know, they've done a couple interviews, everybody asked me about it, and it just gets, you know, it's definitely taken out of context, and, you know, they went to left with fear with it.
All right, well, hopefully we're setting things straight today on the Fight Nerd Radio Show. So I got one last thing to ask you to do. I want you to cut a pro wrestling style promo, if you will, on Paul Daly for me.
I'm not really a big talker, but I'll definitely keep Paul on August 1st. I'll let Paul do the talking. I'll do my talking in the ring.
All right, and you can definitely look forward to seeing that coming up August 1st on HDNet, along with a few other fights, including Hordecki vs. Lazone, Rothwell vs. Gormley, and LC Davis vs. Javi Vasquez. All right, so Jay, thank you very much for being here today, and good luck in your fight.
Thanks for having me, bro. Appreciate it.
All right, and we'll be right back. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Cageside MMA, carrying brands from around the world, such as Triumph United, Clinch Gear, Twins, Windy, and Bad Boy, as well as their own well-crafted brand of Cageside MMA products. CagesideMMA.com is your internet superstore for all MMA gear and apparel. Battle-tested and fighter-approved, you won't find better quality or better service from any other site carrying their variety of gear, apparel, and workout equipment. Head over to CagesideMMA.com where you can shop 24/7 or call 919-477-1999 Monday through Friday. If you don't, you'll regret it. CagesideMMA.com. And we are back, and you just heard from Big Ben Rothwell and Jay Haran. Some good stuff from both fighters, and we wish them luck in their upcoming fights. Many thanks again for appearing on the show this week. And for any promoters out there, Ben Rothwell versus Brett Rogers, let's make it happen after Affliction. Let's see that fight go down. All right, so once again, I want to thank my sponsors for helping me out. CagesideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, BostonBrawler.com, and FindMMAGym.com. Without them, I couldn't pay my electricity bills to make this podcast happen. So next week, we're going to be 1 week away from the Affliction Trilogy pay-per-view. We're going to get some predictions on that. We're also going to talk with Paul Buentello, the headhunter, who will be fighting on that card as well. So stay tuned for that next week. Coming up on the website, again, the Scott Coker interview is going to come up. We also have a few other videos from Vegas we're going to pop up on the site. And some more really good technique videos, so stay tuned to that. Once again, I am the Fight Nerd. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you back here next week.